back and seeing where the paper is going. The first thing I'll just tell you that it's something I learned in grad school. It's a bunch of relevant algebras and integrable systems associated to them. And just to give reference, I will just call it Atenkopf's diamond. We have seen many of these in David Jordan's talk. So the bottom will be just the current algebra. And mid-right is loop algebra. And it's quantization. On the right, it's Yangian. And the arrows between them are kind of straightforward. You can set deformation parameter to zero, or you can degenerate the loop variable. Besides, they come with some difference equations. So starting from most classical story, you have rational KZ connection. I will just write the nature of this. This is a differential equation. From C to the N with the regular singularities at ui is equal to uj. And it also has another compatible connection called Casimir. Again, everything here is rational. This is again system of differential equations on Cartan subalgebra of G with regular singularities on root hyperplanes. So now I'm just going to put two things everywhere. So here you have trigonometric KZ. Differential on C star to the N, and a system of difference equations called dynamical difference equations.
So the bottom, should you think about W to W comma blocks on the plane with an irregular singularity?
I think, yeah, that's the one that's related to the Casimir. This one you're talking about?
So this, differential equation has to do with the parameters of the irregular singularity.
Yes, yes, exactly. If you put both of them together, then it then this, that picks up irregular singularity. Yes. Here,
well, on the right corner, it's on the cylinder.
On here,
irregular singularities, which ones?
This one?
Yes.
I don't know.
Trigonometric,
is it? Yes, I guess. So this is the one that comes from a study of conformal blocks, right? The trigonometric, I see.
The difference equations involve two sets of parameters,
or one? These difference equations?
Yes.
They only involve one set, one parameter, living on Cartan. So it's, lambda plus omega I is equal to something.
What is DD stand
for? Dynamical difference. Sorry.
Now for KM, they're symmetry, right? Sometimes.
Yes. So this N has nothing to do with the Lie algebra, right? But when this is GLK, you can let it act on K by N matrices, then there's a duality.
Yes.
Actually, there's a duality for the entire pretty much picture.
Okay, changing the Yang.
Right, so this becomes that.
Yes.
These difference equations become something else that I'll write here. QKZ, which will be difference equations on C to the n. And this is differential on H. And finally, on the top, everything is going to be, well, trigonometric or So we have at each node a compatible system of differential equations, and these arrows preserve the all the data. So if you degenerate dynamical difference equation on torus, you end up with differential equations on torus, and QKZ trigonometric degenerates to QKZ rational, and so on. This is a complete picture. And here I have to say G has to be a simple algebra of finite dimensional. That's when everything is completely understood. Well, at least you know the definition of all these systems. Well, until now, we didn't know anything about affine G or others. And the paper we are trying to understand is just this piece of the diagram. So we're going to study Yangian rational QKZ equations and trigonometric estimate equations all geometrically, in the hope that you can generalize it, for example, to affine G or GL1 hat, which will be the second part of the paper.
So here for kind of G, right, in these KZ equations, you're putting just which representations are you putting?
So you have to put n. No, you can put different representations, but then you won't have a symmetric group invariance, that's all. So you'll get the action of pure paired group.
So this diamond for G sim for G being A type must have to do with A type equivalence, right?
G type quivers, as in you can realize Yangian from in the quiver varieties of or the quiver corresponding to G. Yes.
Yeah. But the whole diamond. With the G type quiver, three dimensional G type quivers.
The quantum side definitely, right? Once you have the equivariant cohomology or equivariant K theory, then you automatically get quantization parameters.
Yes.
I don't know if I've seen this for classical, this bottom. You just have to turn it off in this clever way.
You need to think about it as the actual H2, not just the X plus H2.
Okay.
If you want to go to the right side, you need neural symmetry, and then you do the.
Right, So this picture, like I said, is symmetric for type A.
Yeah.
There's a.
And so for a fine G, it has to do with a fine quiver?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's
also the
stupid
thing, it's an unmodified
space.
So this is our or goal. We're going to construct these three things geometrically, and we pretty much saw how this is going to come by. So in Justin's talk was a definition of stable envelopes, which we'll then use to define R matrix, which then we'll use to define Youngian.
So the difference and differential equations themselves don't require you to know anything about Youngian. Oh, no,
not entire Youngian, yes.
Write down just the difference equation.
I was actually going to write them down now. Oh, okay. If that's okay, I can just tell you what.
Go ahead.
So just to give you some the nature of what the answer we are looking for once we try geometrizing everything. Yeah, Columbia is famous for coming up with words. Now we have categorification and it's not geometrification, I guess. So let me just write these down for simple algebra. What's the nature of these equations? Before sort of refreshing the memory on stable envelopes and defining R matrix. Okay. So let's just quickly refresh the memory on what Youngian is. I'm not going to give you all the generators and relations, so don't worry. So Youngian of G is a graded Hopf algebra over polynomial ring. Here, degree of H bar will be 1. And I'll just list a bunch of properties. For example, if you turn H bar off, you just recover the enveloping algebra of GU. Then it also has one parameter group of Hopf algebra automorphisms. And it's triangular in a funny way. There is a universal R matrix, which lives in formal series and universe, coefficients from second tensor of Youngian, satisfying a bunch of properties. The first one just says the first order term of R is the Casimir of G. The second one says it does what R matrix is supposed to do, namely intertwine coproduct and opposite coproduct, except now there is a parameter. So if I take an opposite coproduct, shift first leg by parameter u, this is related to original coproduct. Again, shift on the first leg, and you conjugate it by R. I'm sure everybody knows these things, but I'm just going to list them up because we will see all of them for geometric R matrix. You have these hexagon relations, hexagon axioms. It's just easier to understand this, remember, as if I think of first representation which is already tensor product of two as a single representation and move it past the third. It's same as first crossing 2-3 and then 1-3. And finally, it's unitary. Okay. I guess just using 3 and 2, we can prove that R satisfies Young-Baxter equation. So I was going to write down what those two systems are, and I need one little piece of notation. The current algebra corresponding to Cartan doesn't get deformed. It sits inside Y as an infinite dimensional commutative algebra. And since it's graded, its degree zero part is just involving the algebra of G. All right, so where are these equations? Now if I take n representations of Youngian, I want to write finite dimensional, but it is to be taken with a little bit of pinch of salt. Everything is defined over polynomial ring in one variable. So it's a free finite rank module over CH bar, and it's a graded representation for Youngian. So the equation will be for a function depending on n plus 1 parameters. Taking values in V1 tensor Vn. So one side of the equation is going to be if I take derivative with respect to an element of dual Cartan, then you will have a form. Something like this. Let me just write it like this. This whole thing turns side. So here you have regular singularities on root sub tori, and here is a formula for what the differential equation does. So I'm supposed to put a check here, but whatever. So you have one equation. So these are consistent PDEs. Now what this element is, that's something I didn't tell you because I didn't tell you the definition of Youngian in terms of generators and relations, but it's the first order element coming from Cartan, so H times U. So you take this element, you apply coproduct N times. Then you shift by points A1 through AN. and then evaluate on the NVI. Size of vector in the space. So you can even try to solve this equation in endomorphism of a V1 tensor VN, right?
But I'm trying to understand in terms of the state chain system. There's an equation saying for every element of H, you get a vector of the fluid space in the sense of the differential equation.
So the differential equation must be changing. It's only a standard of the fifth pattern.
Exactly, the modern number of the HM right.
Okay, so we have a very function, any function there. I mean, Hamiltonian.
Yes.
He's saying that he satisfies this equation.
So you're saying, well, maybe the transfer matrix is just two eigenvalues. So as I change the monotropy,
yes.
I can take an eigenfunction.
Yes, I mean, it should be possible to follow the function of T. Mm-hmm.
For preserving the norm or something.
Yeah, so the norm, right? So what fixes the norm? Yeah. Also, I don't understand what is the meaning of the psi integration. I guess that's
what
I was kind of. Well, size is
the
common cross
manning.
So, I'm trying to take the expectation value of some
twisted
count operator.
It is the
kind of
size and
operator.
Is
the
size the operator?
Okay, the operator is not an
arm, right? Well, size is not going to read it as wrong. Size and output.
No, but I'm saying that the way I was thinking that this vector space is a space of operator, at least the count of the necessary theory.
Yes.
We're looking at expectation value in the next of the graph.
Yes.
Something like that. I mean, sorry, just whatever is the J function.
Yes. Yeah, that I sort of knew for the quantum loop algebra upstairs. So the fusion operator satisfies these two equations. There's something called fusion operator for quantum affine algebra. And the equations were derived as they satisfy these two equations. But I don't know anything like that for Yangians, sorry. I mean, coming up with joint solution of differential difference equations is kind of hard.
The funny thing is that, I mean, if I was in the bottom, then it's a little bit different. So if I were to put the actual J function, which is a condition value of 1, I would get something which satisfies the PC equations, not the KC equations. So something that there is something I've been kind of saying for quite a while, and I think it has been commented, but not. You get the paper at some point, which is what are those twisted kind of operators which give you the spin chain wave function. But what is the physical meaning of this psi? What is we want to be? It's not very important.
In the
model,
we can compare the physical
meaning.
So the
operators
is a
GP
theory.
But which ones?
Well, I actually haven't seen these things in the Molyko-Kunkov paper. I don't know which part.
They talk about the V1 tensor VN over space networks in terms of cohomology, cross-networking.
Right, but they also have the, which we will see probably maybe today or maybe next time, these two systems, differential and difference. But I don't know they talk about this solving the system or actually coming up with a joint solution. Because psi is here, I'm just writing a bunch of equations for an unknown function.
Right.
So if you knew the actual operators, you could put them in a localization formula and get psi.
Right.
Explicitly.
Yes.
Something.
Right. Hopefully.
How is this differential equation related? You have a family transformation depending on the
inner
system of H.
Right.
Differentiating that family.
But the, all right, your transfer matrix is depending on elements of Cartan.
Right, because they are monic.
Yes, you get one commutative family for each element of H.
Exactly.
I don't know. I was thinking about it, but I have no, I don't know the answer.
Yeah, for example, see, what if I put the transfer matrix there omega? I mean, if I do the derivative of the transfer matrix back to omega, do I get the conjugate of the transfer matrix to the right hand side?
Probably, yeah, that's what he was asking, but I don't know the answer.
Yeah, that would be great.
Because then clearly the wave function would.
Okay.
That was true that I would understand this equation.
So that's the differential system, and the difference system again for the same function will have a form. Like this. If you shift the ith AI by the step chi, that's why I kept that chi in the denominator and didn't say anything about it. It's going to be the step of the difference equation. And these things are written in terms of R matrix. And it's always two conventions, and I have to remember which one am I using. We're not done yet, hold on. Excellent. Sorry. I'm sorry? Yeah, so lambda acts on the ith component. So the n, and we have n fold tensor product. So lambda is an element of H which acts on VI, but not nowhere else.
So we shift each special factor by the same amount?
So in the first leg, yes, you shift AI by AI plus chi in here. Then you have lambda acting on ith component, and then you have, again, a chain of R matrices like this.
The matrices are, broadly speaking, transporting AI to it, all the way to beginning. I think
that
it's like that.
AI all the way to the beginning.
I feel like here we have n things arranged in a circle, like in one path.
Yeah, but then why?
Yeah.
Okay, so somehow it's moving it around, then.
So this can should probably give some references. So this is from the paper of Frankel and Richtigen, where they derived these equations for fusion operator, quantum affine algebra. Those equations were from a paper of Valerio Toledano Laredo. They call it trigonometric Casimir connection. And he also proved that the two are compatible. You can check that so that this system is consistent, which is same as Young-Baxter equation. So. And the fact that R is of weight zero. But whatever, so you can move lambda tensor lambda over R. So you're decreasing the second leg all the way up to I plus 1. And here you're decreasing the first leg from I minus 1 all the way to 1. But the fact that these two are consistent is actually just did the calculation and they are. There's no conceptual explanation. So you just check that the commutation relations of Yangians, which I never told you, they imply that this element, which is kind of Casimir for root alpha and Ti, the commutation relation with R give you that the two systems are consistent. So this is sort of giving you the answer that we already knew for simple algebras, and now we're going to do all these geometric constructions and see if we get generalizations of these. Okay. So I can move on to the next chapter of my talk. Was there any questions?
Yeah, I mean, did you know how this QKZ equation behaves with respect to the quantum mechanics? Same question as last time.
But I don't understand the question, at least in this context. So,
well, I can take the cost of this. Mm-hmm. And then I do my slide. Mm-hmm. That's operator.
But transfer matrix is just the product of R matrices in like this, right?
Right.
So it's not going to satisfy any difference equation of this type.
Does it commute itself?
This is commute with this?
Yeah.
That should be easy to check if it's true. Yeah, that should be true. Right?
Why?
For n is equal to 1, it's just R, and R matrix does commute with transfer. But I'm sorry?
Should be able to check this myself.
I'm confused about the lambda I. Lambda I is an auxiliary of very high for the I.
Lambda is an element of the torus, right? Yes.
So what's lambda substitutes with I?
So if you have a representation of Yangian, it's an integrable representation, so you can integrate to the action of torus.
Right.
So the element of the torus will act on the ith tensor factor Vi.
Oh, yes.
But why does that commute with the transfer matrix?
That doesn't commute, but if you take lambda tensor lambda, it commutes with R, because R is of weight zero.
When the whole system
is
asymmetric,
each
symmetry. Ah! So this wouldn't be true in the
elliptic case.
But what wouldn't be true in the
elliptic case? The elliptic system, the transfer matrix, does not
commute. Ah, right, okay. Right, that's true. It has the other end. Yes. If you're acting on one side,
that's true.
No, you can't move this past any of Ri's if that's what you're asking. It has to be here.
That's right. So understand, how does that matrix?
How does that?
How comes the transfer matrix could commute with
V? Ah.
So that the R's are going to move the A around, okay? But then the lambda must somehow convert it
to something.
To the R of A plus chi, right? And then the other R's are bringing it back.
I see. So you will have transfer matrices which are labeled by elements of torus, but if you apply this, you have changed the element of the torus. Is that what?
The matrix labeled by A, yeah. That's right. So lambda is the physical lambda.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. So I'll just write these down and this is sort of my motivation to start even reading this paper, because none of these systems are known in this explicit way for G not finite dimensional simple. For affine Yangians, I guess people are still working on writing the coproduct. We don't know the R matrix exists. You can't write these operators. But and just to spoil the ending, the differential equation I wrote down is going to come from operator of quantum multiplication. By divisors, and QKZ is going to come from what they call shift operators. I'm sorry?
You've never used the hash before.
Ah.
What do you need to have a G? Right?
You only need something.
I mean, can you do this for any gauge theory?
Yes. So that's the whole paper. I said, but that's the whole paper. You can't do it for starting from any quiver. So.
Right, so they don't need to be necessarily affine.
No, but that was my personal motivation when I started.
Maybe what you get or something insane moving out, like in some crazy huge algebra.
Yes.
But that's, I guess in this paper, that's fine. Mm-hmm. You can start from whichever quiver you want. Mm-hmm. And okay, let's do some Mollikuk-Winkoff stuff now. So the first act is over. I'm not going to use any of those notations anymore.
Okay.
So T won't be that shift of parameter. It'll be a torus, and so on and so forth. Let's just go back to where we were last time. And I'm just going to give you 5 minute summary of 2 hour lecture, where we had some holomorphic symplectic manifold. I'm changing your notation, I'm sorry. I'm not following, I was following Nakajima's notes, but I can't write that boldface T. Exactly. On which you have an action of torus, and this action was supposed to be Hamiltonian, and we have another C star floating around which rescales omega, right? Let me just use T for the product of the two. So to this data, we associated a map which goes from T covariant cohomology of the A fixed points to just the T covariant cohomology. And it depended on a bunch of things, most importantly, choice of a chamber. So C inside Lie algebra of A, well, real form, was a T choice of a chamber. And it also depended on something called polarization, but I'm going to suppress that because it attracted a lot of questions, and it was half an hour long. we'll just list the properties it's supposed to satisfy. So this is unique. Map of HT of a point module such that if I take something from a connected component of the fixed point set, then its image satisfies three properties. So the properties were kind of listed as it's triangular, you know the diagonal entries, and you know the off-diagonal entries have some codimension condition. First, triangularity, it said the support of this, the image has to lie inside union of leaves. Leaves are defined relative to the chamber. I'll just draw a little picture to indicate what this is. Second condition was if you restrict it to the top F, you pick up Euler class of positive or negative F, and plus. And there was a, that's where the sign and polarization, the mess was. And third condition was if I restrict now it to something smaller, then its degrees to be bounded. And this degree is to be understood as polynomial in A, the algebra of A. Let's put A here. Because if something lives over here, it's the same as C star equivalent cohomology of F. Tensor HA of a point because F was fixed by A. And this is just functions. And degree in the sense of polynomial here. What, this?
Yeah.
No, this as it is does not. You know the uniqueness and your construction said you are taking specialization. You constructed this table by taking specialization of diagonal entries in Borel-Moore homology and what you get is divisible by H bar now. Right. So this is, yes. Well, this is a corollary of the construction, not from this, that gamma restricted to F prime is divisible by H bar. Let me just draw a little picture of, since I don't want to write all the definitions, like these kind of pictures. So suppose you have a connected component of fixed point set. You can take the, all the things that flow into it by C in the direction of the chamber that we picked. And that was the definition of leaf. And this also gave you the definition of order. If now take a closure of this, anything that lies, well, intersects the closure has to be less or equal. That's the definition of ordering, which also depends on choice of the chamber. The first condition just says that it's supported on all the things that flow into F, and then all the things that flow into the things that flow into F, and so on and so on. This tells you the diagonal entry has to be given in terms of half of the normal bundle of F inside X. And then you have some condition which determines off-diagonal entries. Okay. Cool. And the last part of Justin's talk was the definition of R matrix. This is basically changing the chamber from C to C prime. So if you have different choices of chamber, you have different stable envelope maps going into the same space. We never said it was invertible, but we said it was invertible after you do the field of fractions here. So this is going to now live in endomorphisms of cohomology of fixed points, but its coefficients will be rational. And let me just write round parentheses. Now we're taking field of fractions, so rational functions instead of polynomials. Yeah. If I skip T, G, whatever, they're supposed to be there. So I want to state a bunch of properties of R and convince you that they're true.
The answer is probably no. Is there any symbol you could explain to see why you define exact types or matrix for some simple case?
Right, so you did the T star P1 example. Right.
I didn't get a chance to do it. I wanted to do it, but
you wrote down stable envelope of the stable envelope corresponding to one chamber, and that's all that's needed anyway. So you're going to take ratio of the two things anyway. So in this example, you had two fixed points, and I think its notation was your flow is going towards zero, and you have cotangent fiber going into infinity. So corresponding to that choice, you can write down the matrix for C. Meaning I'll act on zero and look at the coefficient of zero and infinity in the restriction, right? Let me try to see if I can get this right. Did I do this? I think I did this. Here we go. Here's going to be a sign. So with the convention that they were stated last time, meaning H bar is the weight of T star scaling action, scaling fibers of T star P1. And I think in my convention, U is the weight of tangent space at infinity. Right, because stab C of infinity is just this, and you restrict it, you pick up, you only get that contribution. So if you take the ratio of this, you get basically Yang's R matrix. No, sorry, L operators.
Imagine I wrote down these L operators which generate Q, which is the corresponding Cauchy matrix is Q. They have this triangular form. It's four matrix.
Right, so there was another idea that was around before Molyi-Kukenkov, which is R matrix splits into three pieces, right? Upper triangular, diagonal, lower triangular. And here you have to somehow democratically give diagonal part to both two sides. Now you want to write it as ratio of two things, something lower triangular and upper triangular. In my mind, that's where the whole ambiguity was. You can't really do it. You can only do it up to sine. That was the whole. I thought that was the reason. It was kind of basic, but I don't know. I might be mistaken. Why this? There was always this ambiguity of sign. You have to pick a polarization.
Oh, it makes sense. Yeah. Which one do you
have there? Okay. Okay. It's good. But yes. We can also see that what kind of things will have to invert to write down this stable inverse. It's always going to be this Euler class of n plus or n minus that you need to invert. So you will normally have to. Over a fixed point f. Let me just write down what it was. You have a normal bundle inside X of a connected component of the fixed point set. And you can split it into positive and negative weight spaces corresponding to your chamber C, a general direction in your chamber C. So since you still have the symplectic form, one of them is dual to the other. And that picks up h bar. As you can see, that the two things are always difference of h bar. So one is some class, and another is that class plus h bar. So once you do stab c and stab negative c inverse, you'll always have things like x over x plus h bar. So these are the things you're going to see in the denominator. Which you will probably better write as. I don't want to mess this up. I guess, yeah, that sounds about right. So just to say that you can expand everything as a formal series in H bar, and your leading term is always going to be one, something we saw for Drenfeld-Zahr matrix. So, this is just to convince you that the very first property of our matrix we want to have is it's 1 plus things divisible by h bar. The
matrix is a representation of the trade
group of these chambers. The spectral parameter. Hmm? You still have spectral parameter.
But wait, when you take the spectral parameter, you get it.
Well,
no.
Look carefully.
What relation does the matrix satisfy?
Young-Baxter equation.
What does it mean? So this C, the chambers are just some.
Right. So these are chambers in that Lie algebra A, that which is Lie algebra of the torus we are taking fixed points with respect to.
Yes.
So you have a hyperplane arrangement inside it given by weights of the normal bundle, right? So if you have, well, I was going to draw this picture later, but sure. So right now I'm just saying you take any two chambers of your choice, and you can define R matrix as ratio of the two maps. But then the Young-Baxter equation will say that going crossing walls one at a time this way is same as crossing walls one at a time this way. This is.
So unless you understand why symmetry becomes different, walls look completely different from each other. So the function you can practice is RRR, but it would be three completely different R.
Yes. So RC, C1, C1, C2, C.
And the fact that somehow you can, they all look like that is still not trivial.
They all look like.
Like if you take the correct manifold, all those walls will give you, say, a geometric matrix like that.
Right, so this is.
So the fact that this tau C1 generalizes.
This is to everything. We have to say something, yes. Because. my order of things in which I want to say it is getting mixed up, but sure. But. So we all. And also we have. If you send this equivariant parameters for A to infinity, you will again get 1.
So something like this would have been defined no matter what this map state C was, right? But the fact that you picked a very specific. So which properties of that matrix is realistic now?
Right.
Well,
I mean,
so the Young-Baxter equation
generalizes
in
B. I mean, the fact you could have viewed that the Young-Baxter, no matter what this map that C was, right?
But
what
exactly.
The same thing going different ways?
No.
As long as it's had, if a given map has C for every chamber, clearly, that expression is independent of how I go from a chamber to the other, right?
He had a point that if I just take any random things labeled by C prime and I just take this composition, I will get 1 because things will just cancel in sequence.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that going from here is same as going to the other way is the unitarity property of our matrix, which will depend. So, a little. So. Just to say that going from C to C prime is pretty much same as going the other way around, but you're taking inverse, right? So I guess, well, there's still not much to it, right? The way I said it. Well, let's see.
Yeah. When is that this stable envelope construction is really buying you something?
What is it buying for you?
Well,
Why did I pick that to define these elements and not something else?
Well, stable basis. Okay, no, you have a good point. Well, one of the properties that you have is that it preserves restrictions. So if I'm on a chamber and I restrict myself to a facet of the chamber, then I can do it in two steps. And that uses the fact that you're composing Lagrangian cycles, and what you get in the end satisfies the three properties. It has to be the one you wanted.
So saying the fact that all these walls keep it the same amount.
Exactly. So if you have chamber C, and inside here, I guess you have C prime, you can take the span of this and get Lie algebra A prime sitting inside Lie algebra A. You can form a diagram like this, right? So first I take fixed points with respect to the larger one. I can do it in steps. So here I'll take the stable map corresponding to the chamber C. Here I'll take it corresponding to chamber C prime. And here I'll map C to wherever it goes. I'll call it C mod C prime.
It's about the locality.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I never thought about that. Right. So this diagram commutes is kind of maybe the reason we picked this table map.
It would be nice to know what are the properties that fix this table and the lock.
Right.
Because, you know, maybe the final definition is more like the result of a calculation. Like, somebody wanted to do something.
No, you're right. I was probably too quick in saying that going from here to here is same as crossing one wall at a time, because that's also.
It is literally true, right? These envelopes are just different bases in the
right.
Same space.
Yes. Yes.
So really, no matter how you jump, you get to the same place. But the fact that these jumps are
local.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so I guess this is important. We maybe should have started from this picture.
Do you understand these importance of manifolds in terms of
basically think about manifolds? No. As a suspicion,
I'm sorry, what?
I mean, clearly they won't be tables in the.
Oh,
planes attached to vacuum.
So people know that these things are the characteristic cycles of modules.
Which one?
The standard modules know they have some underlying.
Right, okay, so these are the vectors.
Sorry, Justin, what?
Oh, I was just saying that the cohomology class represented by the stable envelope associated with this point.
Mm-hmm.
Is the characteristic cycle of the Verma module corresponding to that fixed point in the appropriate category O. But it's not true that it's that you could figure out what simples are in the Verma from this. Like, it's the standard issue of simple modules may not have irreducible characteristic cycles. So you can't read off like Kajnov boosting polynomials.
So that means that if you try to but if you talk about them as Verma cycle, would you be able to sort of interpret this matrix in terms of Verma?
Are these the shuffling functors?
Yeah, they're the shuffling functors. Yeah, the shuffling functors for sure. Like basically, although there's like a slight, let me check, there's like a slight discrepancy in the post that talks about. Didn't know stable envelopes well enough to interpret at the time, but maybe now. Maybe now that I'm smarter than I was. But they're supposed to be.
So is there some definition of stable envelopes involving a deformation of the flow?
I don't.
We didn't
talk about that, right?
Didn't we talk about this?
Yeah, you talked about it, but I don't think I remember it.
It was that if you have.
If you deform the man.
Yeah, if you deform the man.
The whole symplectic resolution into a family. Is that the one?
So that's affine.
Right.
Then the stable envelope is basically trivial because you won't have the flow. None of the flow sets for different fixed points will intersect one another.
And then you bring it back.
Then you bring it back.
Yeah. Which is precisely the doctrine of Fermat's group, right? That if you go to generic,
you see that
the only Fermat is
going to say that. Then they break heads.
Yes. That's correct.
But at the end of, so there's this paper of Lotsev's on categories over quantized symplectic resolution, where he compares with the stable envelopes.
Sorry, which paper?
Categories over quantized symplectic resolution, by Lotsev. But then basically he talks about getting some of the twisting functors are matrices. Yeah, sorry. The twisting functor is not step C. The twisting functor is an R matrix.
Yeah, but step C is what gives up that patches the fixed point and those point level.
Yeah.
So you guys have the categorical limit?
Yeah, it's whatever. I mean. And, you know, we know what the free, the base satellite with great relation.
But it's gonna, as far as I understand, it's not in the top box, it's really in the bottom box. So this shuffling function, 50 functions, I think are doing things on the bottom.
Yeah, that's right. Because we get things on H.
Cartano.
So I think all these functors.
Mm-hmm.
It's better parameter work where the mass is, right?
Yes.
No, I mean, you can still have it, right? No, okay, so you're saying you'll have differential equations only, not differential equations anymore. And for the Goodwin integrable system, you're not talking about the spin chain anymore, you're talking about the Godel model.
Godel?
No, not Godel. It's Godel.
Good.
Well, the big equations are not products of things.
Sorry,
but just sums of things.
I should actually say one other thing. It's not quite the VR matrix. Is the shuffling functor, which kind of makes sense because this thing's going from fixed points to fixed points.
Yes.
The shuffling functors go from O to O, so the shuffling functors are actually this. Right. So it's the opposite. So it goes from the cohomology to the cohomology, not the fixed point to the cohomology, fixed points to cohomology. Yeah,
sure.
But anyway, I just wanted to be clear that like they don't like it, that the R matrix lives in a different space.
I mean, it's on the bottom when you take the limit as h bar to zero, right? While at the same time sending. No, that's right. The equation things like u plus h bar or u minus h bar, right? Yeah, you send h bar to zero, you mean you're fixed. So this goes like one, becomes one plus h bar over something. And this product becomes a sum at the beginning order. Sorry, so I know. So you send the twisting parameters, you tune the twisting parameters to zero, and at the same time you send h bar to zero. So at the level of the matrix, I guess you're not me. You're going to the classical matrix.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So
but I could be the semi classical.
Yes, very classical. So you're taking the leading order and the bar expansion of that matrix.
Right.
You write this one plus h bar and something, and you give the something. That's right. So you give little r, I guess.
So this gives you the coefficients of KC equations, anyway.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The classical KC equations is that.
Yes. I think that is what the contact test with the structures.
Okay, now I kind of forgot what I was going to say.
Categorical double variance.
Okay. We can stop. I guess I. Well, I was gonna say two things. One will take probably 10 minutes, but the other one will take longer. But it's just to use this picture to say. So at least hexagon identities. For which we'll have to go to the setup of quiver varieties. And you write your framing W as sum of 3. And if you want to split it as tensor product of 3, you have to pick this three-dimensional torus with 3 scales. Yes. So. So, but if I just take fixed points with respect to a smaller one, which is just on the first, just x on the first one, my then I'm going to be viewing the representation as second one as the second and third tensor factor is a joint one representation. And to then view it again as split, I'll have to enlarge it by adding the generic direction. So let's say I put it inside and here I'll have to pick generic generic vector, which means I just pick two numbers, one larger than the other, and take the span of that vector. So now this is a two-dimensional torus, and I have a sub-torus here, and I can just form the same diagram, which will then tell me that R matrix for the chamber arrangement in A1. So I can write as product of 2, because now I'll have this picture which I drew earlier. And to go from one side to the other, I can cross two walls. So that will give me the hexagon identities. So this will be. This is the second one, which said one tensor delta of R is R13, R12. So our geometrically constructed R matrix satisfies hexagonal identities. The one that's more fun, and it'll be in the second part of the paper, is once you're going to write your quiver as quotient of some infinite quiver. So for example, one loop as an infinite quiver folded. Then again, this picture is going to tell you you can write your R matrix as product of infinitely many R matrices. That will take a little bit more time to say, but okay. I guess I can stop here.
Thank you.